Here's Andy Udman.
My first reaction is, oh, crap. Does this mean I have to go through chemo again? And it may. I don't know. But I'm just getting ready to get my first haircut and after growing for 5 months, and I just don't want to lose it again.
I took a tour through Labatt's last year, and they say that they check every bottle of beer that goes out of that place 150 or more times. And how many checks are done on every bag of medication that goes out to save people's lives? How many checks are done on that medication?
What a comparison, Joe.
This is ridiculous that a pharmacy tech in the hospital had to pick this up, that you can't rely on the supplies that are coming in. Think of what it means. If every time I prescribe, I've got to check the supplier, I've got to check the dosage, I've got to check the manufacturing. You imagine what that means to how effective the system is? We have to count on the what we're getting is the real thing. It's not counterfeit. It's not diluted. It's not that.
Wait a minute. What a concept. We can't trust Big Pharma? Unbelievable. Where have you heard that message before? Well, folks, you have heard it right here. You have heard it for years. And you've heard it from Pam Colleen. And she joins us this morning. And I've asked Pam for a favor. I said, Pam, London just is exploding with emotion about this particular story, and they need to be heard. And it's so ironic that we're going to slide into our topic this morning with Pam, was a veterinarian who shares, Pam, much of this agenda, only we were going to do it in the context not only of people, but of
pets. And animals, yeah.
Uh-huh. And so, but I'm asking if we can just hold off on that for now, because you've seen the phone lines are just lighting up. And so the question we're going to focus on this half hour is, who do we blame for this drug scandal? And in the context of this, I want to share a conversation we had with a London lawyer this morning who was very open with Steve Garrison. Hey, we're starting with this drug company, but that may lead to others like doctors, like hospitals. We just don't know. Margaret, what's your perspective on all of this?
Well, I just wanted to let you know there's breaking news. And as a matter of fact, it just happened on your news at on the hour. And you can't get rid of Deb Matthews, but you can fire the person who's responsible for the see-through Lululemon pants.
I'm wondering why in the world you would raise that right now.
Because it's a joke.
She's asking about accountability.
In 2008, this woman was hired to save Lululemon. Now you can see through the pants, she's fired.
I see.
That's more important.
I missed your
to
point.
To Canada.
You're saying we can fire someone and chastise them for allowing a product on the market which, you know, is a see-through pants, basically, but we can't fire the person who's in charge of our health.
Right.
Oh,
it's okay to kill people.
Wow.
But if you can see their striped underwear, God forbid.
That was so profound, it went right over my head. Margaret, I thank you. That is my goodness.
That's very wise.
Let's go to Marianne Hebb, who is the executive director of Child Can in London. Marianne, I'm so glad you've called. I can't imagine what your perspective is on all of this.
Hi, Andy. Good morning. Well, I wish I was calling for a different reason, but I think my first, you know, as a mom and as a parent, and is disgusting. You know, just when we think things can't get any worse with this Minister of Health, they do. And, you know, I as an organization, you know, we're on the front lines with our families each and every day, and you know, they deal with enough on their plates every day, and to have even a little inkling of a worry that maybe their kids might be part of the, you know, the bad chemo is totally disgusting. And I just don't know when we're going to say enough's enough with this Minister of Health.
Marianne, I've been on the Children's Radiothon with our whole team here at Astro Radio for years and years. And I know that there's two things that generate the radiothons are two things that keep parents going when their children are fighting cancer. One is trust and one is hope. Trust in the medical profession and the drugs and the skills that they have, and hope that their child is going to come out of this. This drug scandal story has just shaken all of that.
Absolutely. And, you know, and it's not just parents. Think about not just, you know, in the pediatric oncology world, but in the adult world too, like staff having, you know, making sure that every day they're on the front lines, they're doing way above and beyond when they work in the cancer world, whether it's adult or childhood, and, you know, hope and know and having faith themselves that everything that they're doing is with the drugs that they're getting is going to do what they expect it to do.
Wow. Marianne, I appreciate the call. I want to share the conversation I promised, and I want to get into this conversation now, and that is, who do we sue? Who do we go after? Who do we blame? Steve Garrison put the question this morning to Mike Peerless at Siskins, and he had a very interesting answer. I want you to hear that part of the conversation.
But first of all, in this class action suit, who are you suing?
Just suing the company, Mazentech, that carries on business as Marchese Healthcare out of Hamilton, the company that mixed the drugs and supplied them to the hospitals.
So this is where it gets interesting. The reaction that I'm getting from listeners and also some people who are directly involved in this case are suggesting this. Why are you just suing the drug company? Why aren't you suing the hospitals? Why aren't you suing the doctors? Why aren't you suing the ministry here in the province of Ontario?
Well, first of all, from what we know, and it's early days, so the case could develop in a different direction, I guess. But from what we know at the moment, the drug was supplied to the hospitals by a pharmaceutical company, and it was mixed wrong. Now, as your caller earlier today, the medical caller mentioned, it's very difficult, if not impossible, I suspect, and certainly the physicians that we've spoken to make this indication, for them to, you know, check what comes in a drug that comes from a pharmacy. In other words, you know, hard to imagine that a doctor is at fault if he or she prescribes a medicine. The medicine comes and gets, you take it, and then it turns out the medicine isn't what the doctor prescribed. I mean, the doctor can't check what's in that IV bag. Okay. At least that's not routine. So that's the reason.
All right. So we stop with the doctor, and the interview you're referring to is Dr. Mitch Schulman.
Yeah.
He's our AstroMedia medical consultant. He brought up an interesting point. This has been going on for more than a year. And apparently, this whole story erupted out of a small little hospital at Peterborough about a year ago when it was pointed out, when somebody at this hospital decided to test this formula and found out there was a problem. And then the ministry was consulted. So I ask you the question again. I understand you're going after the drug company, but certainly there's got to be other people that are supposed to, like, does it not appear to you that there should be some kind of check system along the way?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, there probably is supposed to be a check system, but, and again, is it possible that someone else gets implicated in this? Of course that's possible, but it's early. What I know for sure at the moment is what's in the letter and what we've been able to determine ourselves and what we've been able to determine from speaking to the experts that we use. And so far, I don't see a problem with what the minister said. Now, when Dr. Schulman said this morning that the discovery was made over a year ago, that's not the information that I had before today. So, it's very early in the piece, but... if that turns out to be the case, there may be others. There may be lots of others that end up in the case. And I will say this, these kinds of complicated pieces of litigation, they often evolve and develop. There may be, more defendants than less by the end of the day. And you just never know. They can change. There's no rush in a sense to make sure you have every right defendant in the first day when you start your case. You probably have 2 years before you have to sort that all out. The reason to start a case relatively early is to make sure that people understand that there is an option, that there is a legal proceeding going on that will protect their interests.
Have you received any reaction from the drug company at all?
Absolutely nothing. I've read the kind of non-comments that they've been making to the press, and I read their press release. But that's all.
So there's the conversation Steve Garrison had with Mike Peerless at Siskins this morning about who they might sue. They're starting with this particular drug company. And I'm asking you this morning, who should be sued? We'll get to the phone lines in just a moment, but I want to bring in Pam Colleen because, oh my goodness, we have discussed this endlessly, Pam, about the drug companies, the accountability, mm-hmm. how the doctors are overwhelmed. And here on the very day when you're in this morning, this story blows up in a major, major way. Everybody is talking about it. We've heard some very cynical questions in the last hour about who is responsible. And I'm just asking you to weigh in this morning. You've been very clear about
it. I'm just going to create an analogy. Whenever we hear about the blowout in the factory farm food system, whenever we hear about an E. coli outbreak, Andy, what do people do? People start searching out some sort of alternative. They start looking to farms where animals are out on pasture. Anyway, this is a similar analogy where you see this fallout happening, this negative fallout happening within the healthcare system. I think more and more people are going to flock to look for alternatives, preventative healthcare. According to the Institute of Medicine, 70% of your health outcome is determined upon your diet and lifestyle choices. So we need to start turning that route in order to solve this crisis of where we're seeing so much unaccountability within the medical mafia.
And I'm sure that that will be the net effect of all of this story.
I'm hoping it will
long term.
I hope
short,
so. Yeah.
But short term,
yeah.
People are wrestling with who needs to be held responsible for this disaster. Deb Matthews. Drug companies, the doctors, the hospital. We have talked so often about how drugs get on the market. The research is contaminated. There have been suggestions that the drug companies in the U.S. are, you know, they're constantly. Eli Lilly, how many lawsuits?
GlaxoSmithKline.
GlaxoSmithKline. How many billions have they been?
Billions of dollars. Last year, I think it was a $3 billion settlement, and that's just one settlement. They've got a rap sheet as long as my arm. We're in a real conundrum here in Ontario where we're seeing a healthcare crisis. We're seeing this healthcare crisis bankrupt our province. We're seeing so much shoddiness happening within the system. I'm hoping people start looking to alternatives.
See, here's the sad thing for me. And we've had so many of these families call up this morning who are in this battle or who have just, one man had lost his wife from brain cancer Monday of this week, 3 days ago, and somehow he worked up the courage to call, and he was very cynical about all the things that you and I have discussed so often about the drugs, whether they work in the first place. Let me throw that. Do these drugs, these chemotherapy drugs, even work in the first
place?
Well,
what we should do is invite Alan Castles back on the show, and he's the author of the books Seeking Sickness and Selling Sickness, and we'll ask him for the numbers, because when we've talked to Alan in the past, he is, and I'm generalizing his statements, but essentially, when you look at the treatment for cancer, and you look at the testing and the treatment and so on that is done on certain cancers, and I say certain cancers, that he says the outcome here is really no different, where other countries may not be using the same modalities. So we have to question outcomes. We have to see if these drugs and treatments and testing and so on are actually improving the quality of our lives. And that's not what's being talked about with regards to this subject matter.
No, and it's too emotional right now.
It's very emotional.
Right now, yeah. People are dealing with the fact that their lives may be in danger today. Literally, if you can even imagine, hearing on the radio that the drug that they've been trying to save your life with has been compromised. I mean, people need to go to prison for this. First of all, the mistake, but secondly, that it hasn't been found for a year.
Well, I mean, if somebody was asleep at the wheel and somebody wasn't monitoring the dosage, somebody is accountable. That's going to be up to the lawyers and such. But right now, I think consumers obviously are feeling very vulnerable. And they need to do a lot of research on their own right now, because we can see through all the guests we've had on this show, we've had Harvard medical doctors on this show saying buyer beware. We've had researchers on the show, medical researchers on the show saying buyer beware. I think that that's a very pervasive message that should be now set out in the media. I wish the media would change the messaging in and around this story, but I don't see that happening.
In what direction?
Well, I think the media should be saying, you know, what can we do to avoid this disaster from happening again? And one of the things that should be discussed more is more about correct diet and correct lifestyle choices. The healthier we are, the less we have to turn to these modalities.
In other words,
help.
Don't get sick in the first place.
And we had C.J. Hunt on the show. He wrote.
Yeah, but it's not a message, yeah. Pam, that people are ready to talk about right now, because we're right in the middle of this drama. Ken, mm-hmm. what's your story?
Well, one I wouldn't like to get sued is the people directly that put out the doses. I'm a two-time survivor, one of having chemo, one of surgery. And those people in the hospital themselves are fantastic. Now, up and above them, I can see them all getting their purses kicked, especially these $1.4 million, the best they're supposed to be in the world. That's why they're at our hospital, CEOs.
Ken, can you believe that a drug which is defective, which has the wrong dosage, is being used to treat thousands of Ontario patients for a year and nobody notices?
Well, I think somebody did notice and it was covered up, according to this bit in Peterborough.
Well, we get a lot of very cynical suggestions this morning about the medical care system, about the drug system, and we've heard every possible suggestion about how lax the system is, but I cannot imagine. Well, we do know from all the callers we've had in the last hour just how it has rocked the world of those people who've been undergoing cancer treatments to think that their medication was compromised.
Well, I'm almost 3 years off of chemo now, but I still woke up during the night thinking about it.
Yeah. Ken, I appreciate the call. Okay, we're coming down to the bottom of the hour. When we come back on the other side, I want to resume what we had planned for this half hour. We've just backed it up a little because I wanted to have that discussion. And that is a veterinary who says, and it almost seems trivial now, but it makes this point. It's not just people who are compromised by bad drugs and bad nutrition. It's our pets. We're going to look at the whole picture with a veterinarian who has ruffled a lot of feathers, shall we say, on this very topic. And it relates perfectly with what we're talking about this morning. The drugs that we're using not only on humans, but on pets, if you're an animal lover. So let me, just before we go to the break, Pam, you always say that as humans, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. How are our animal friends doing?
Our animals are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. I mean, we've seen stories over the last few years. I think CNN or some big outlet did a story on how we're drugging pets with things like Prozac. You know, that pets are in a bad mood, too. It's not just humans. But also pets are sick with things like arthritis and cancer and have blood sugar problems. I mean, we're seeing all of these same health problems in our animals.
Because of?
Oh, they're not being fed the correct foods. So what we should do this morning, if we get a chance with our veterinarian friend, is talk about some research that was done back in the 1940s showing that when you take pets, when you take their food and alter the food from nature, that in three or four generations, then the pets become very sick, that they start developing things like arthritis or cancer. They start developing mood issues and even infertility. So when you denature food, when you take a species away from its natural foods, you're going to see disease. And Will's very familiar with this subject.
Dr. Will Winter is his name. Fascinating topic. I've been watching some of his videos this morning. He'll join us. And we'll keep the phone lines open because this topic of these drugs in London is one that everybody is thinking about and wrestling with this morning. So we're going to continue the conversation. And then after the 11 o'clock hour, by the way, folks, a story I've been wanting to get to all morning is a spokesman for the London Health Coalition to ask him not only Peter Bergmanis, not only about the drug scandal which we're dealing with, but also the job cuts. Can you imagine in the middle of all of this, we're cutting jobs at our hospitals, and yet we're told that even after the $30 million in cuts at London Health Sciences Center, the service may even be better. Which is, my jaw is still on the table over that one. So that's all still to come right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
My first reaction is, oh, crap. Does this mean I have to go through chemo again? And it may. I don't know. But I'm just getting ready to get my first haircut and after growing for 5 months, and I just don't want to lose it again.
This is ridiculous that a pharmacy tech in the hospital had to pick this up. That you can't rely on the supplies that are coming in. Think of what it means. If every time I prescribe, I've got to check the supplier, I've got to check the dosage, I've got to check the manufacturing. You imagine what that means to how effective the system is? We have to count on the what we're getting is the real thing. It's not counterfeit. It's not diluted. It's not that.
I absolutely can't believe that this is the third week in a row now in which we have done our regular health segment on Thursday, and it is tied in directly with the lead story of the day. I'm looking at this morning's Toronto Star. Two major stories right on the front page. The first one is Kathleen Wynne, our premier, vowing to investigate this chemo error Let me read you the first paragraph. A multi-agency investigation into how nearly 1,200 Canadian cancer patients received watered-down chemotherapy treatments started yesterday afternoon at a Mississauga industrial complex. And it's the subject of our discussion here on London Today for the last hour and a half. And above it, the larger headline at the top of the page in the Toronto Star, Boost Drug Oversight, Senate urges Health Canada should have the power to require greater monitoring of medication. The report says, Pam Colleen is with me this morning for our normal, our regular, wouldn't call it normal, our regular Thursday health segment. Pam, I can't believe the news today and how it ties into all the things you and I have discussed for years.
That's right. This story just keeps snowballing into something worse every single year. And I'm hoping, like I said earlier, that this is going to catapult people into thinking differently, into looking for alternatives.
In terms of nutrition.
In terms of nutrition, but obviously, and as we've said on the show before, prevention is the cure.
The prevention absolutely is the cure. And now, it's fascinating, and we're going to introduce our guest in just a moment, who is very much on the same page. Would you introduce Dr. Will Winter?
Well, I'm privileged this morning to have on the show Dr. Will Winter. He's a veterinarian, and he is from Minnesota. He is also a Weston A. Price chapter leader. And actually helps out with the raw milk effort as well. So I hope this morning we can talk a little bit about raw milk.
Okay. Dr. Winter, appreciate you joining us this morning.
Yes, I'm here.
Doctor, I want to ask you right off the top, because we've been talking about this for an hour and a half, this incredible story here in Ontario, and I don't know if you've heard about it in Minnesota or not, but we have had a story that has shaken not only this city, but has shaken this entire province. And that is, it turns out that a medication, the chemotherapy medication that we've been using in our hospitals for the last year, had a reduced dosage, a reduction of about anywhere from 3 to 20% in the actual dosage that patients have been getting. And it ties in so directly with what we've been talking about on our health segment for the last several years on Thursday with Pam Colleen, and that is, big pharma, drugs, do they really cure the diseases that they're prescribed for? And I know that you have a lot of feelings about this subject.
Well, yes, and, you know, fortunately, there's one way to guarantee that all your drugs are going to be safe, and that is to never get sick. That's the obvious way. We do have problems here with diversion. Most of the problems we see with diversion are for narcotics. Again, where the patient is getting a diluted dose, that's a big problem.
But, Will, the big message is that prevention is the cure. And you know so much about the health of animals and their diet, and you've also studied that in relationship to humans. But you also know about how it starts happening at a grassroots level, from the soil level up. Can you describe why you're so interested in this this holistic field?
Well, yeah, I when I got out of veterinary school, of course, I had a syringe in each hand, a syringe of penicillin and a syringe of cortisone, steroid, and the other, and thought I could cure the world. And it didn't take me long, maybe 2 or 3 years, to realize that a lot of the tools we have are just not that effective. And I was frustrated. I felt like I was at the point of ready to change careers. I felt like nature was more powerful, but I didn't quite understand it. I was lucky to have a book come into my hands by a woman named Juliet de Barclay Levy. She wrote The Herbal Guide to the Dog, which I highly recommend to anybody today. It's a 75-year-old book that is as accurate today as it was all those years ago, because truths basically never changed. And I realized then that everything I'd learned in vet school needed to have a complete overhaul. And again, mainly that we were working with drugs to cure problems rather than prevention of problems. So that started me on a long odyssey of that began with being basically unemployable in my profession, because my whole profession is predicated on giving people drugs and scaring people into buying them. And I don't mean that as a slam against my profession. I think there's a lot of honest veterinarians, and there's a lot of success stories where animals have been saved with modern medicine, particularly crash medicine, which is the most valuable thing of all in Western medicine. When you get hit by a car or run over by a bus, you really need modern Western medicine. That's what it's good at. However, when you have a chronic degenerative disease, let's say cancer, arthritis, allergies, you know, the plagues of civilization, Western medicine is probably the worst form of medicine that you can get. So that's the underlying basis of where I've gone with my education. And that applies to not only pets, but to domestic livestock as well.
Okay, let me ask you this, because Pam and I were talking about it earlier, and then we'll segue into a question that Pam has. But Pam always says that humans are sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever. Does the same apply to our pets, Dr. Winter?
Well, it's really interesting. If I had when I first opened my holistic veterinary practice in 1979, I had a dog come in with a pancreatic problem, carried in by an owner who had a disease of the pancreas. And it was like, how could that, it's not contagious, how could that possibly be? But time after time, people with neuroses or anxiety problems would carry in a pet with anxiety. You would see animals that are obese in households that are obese. So absolutely, we control everything in a pet's life. We control their exercise, their diet, the climate in the house, lifestyle, moods, attitudes, all of these things are dictated and controlled by us. So they are absolutely under our influence. And, of course, I work 90% of my day now is involving animals that are raised for food or milk or for meat, things like that. And what I find is that here we put a controlled environment, and they brag about it. Oh, these chickens are never, they never have to go out in the rain, and they never have to sit out in the sun, and they never have to go out when it's cold. Well, guess what? What the living hell that they have is infinitely worse than an animal in nature.
Now, we have a lot of pet lovers listening to the show, and earlier I alluded to the Pottinger cat study. Could you give the listeners a summary of what that study means for their pets?
Dr. Francis Pottinger was worked in a sanitarium in L.A. in the 30s, sanitariums where they treated with people with TB, and TB was the hideous disease of the era that everybody died of. They didn't have hardly any heart attacks. They had very little cancer by comparison to today, but people got tuberculosis. It was considered incurable. At the sanitarium, Dr. Pottinger took 900 cats. He took half of them and fed them a raw diet of raw meat and raw milk. Half of the cats, the other 450, he gave condensed milk, which is kind of wretched, and canned cooked meat. And he watched the difference, which was fascinating. And he did it over four or five generations, and every generation, the cats got worse on the cooked meat and the condensed milk, to the point that he was getting runts and he was getting stunted animals, and the fertility was going way down. And he could have stopped right there, and he said, well, guess what? Raw food is better for cats. But being the genius that he was a friend and colleague of Dr. Weston A. Price, which we might talk about later, the holistic dentist. But he did something brilliant. He reversed the experiment. So all the cats that were on the raw food got the cooked stuff, and all the cats that were on the cooked stuff got the raw food. But what he found was stunning. He found out, you might say, well, guess how long it took him to get better? Well, the answer to that, to make a long story short, is it took four generations. So what Dr. Pottinger proved is that it takes that many generations to cook out the pathology that your ancestors had. So you are affected not only by what you eat, by what your parents ate, your grandparents, and even your great-grandparents' lifestyle. For instance, I was born with a condition that it was subclinical. It wasn't bad. It was a condition of my lungs. Every time I got a cold, I ended up sounded like I had tuberculosis. I was coughing my guts out. And this is throughout my whole childhood, throughout college. It would only be when I got a cold, but it was to the point where I had to have codeine and all these cough suppressants to eventually get over this cough. The first time I went to a homeopathic doctor, I happened to mention this symptom, even though I wasn't having it at the time. And the guy went, oh, I see. Treated me with homeopathic medicine called tuberculinum, which is actually a sterile culture preparation made from a victim of tuberculosis. I've never had the symptoms since. And what he said, did you have any ancestors that had certain problems? Well, of course, we all had ancestors with TB. We all carry this. But a lot of my ancestors were Welshmen who came over from Wales, worked in coal mines in Virginia and Kentucky. And a lot of my ancestors died of miner's consumption, which is miner's lung, from the coal dust. And even though I've never seen a coal mine in my life, I was born with a mild version of miner's lung.
Doctor, I have to jump in because we do have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you about something I saw you say, and it's somewhat related to what we're talking about this morning, but it's such a shocking statement. I have a lot of friends on the farm. I had a lot of friends on the farm. What ones I have left, I won't have after I play this clip. So we're just going to put you on hold so you can hear this clip. Here is the clip from Dr. Will Winter about agriculture.
I have a magazine called The Ecologist. It's an amazing magazine. There's a headline that says, "The greatest mistake of humans in the history of human beings, agriculture." And agriculture is the number one source of pollution on the planet.
I can already see the big tractors pulling in off of Wellington Road to blockade the radio station in protest over what you just said. I want to ask you what you meant by that statement, and then we'll get back to the health of our pets and what we can learn about the health of our pets, our dogs and our cats, which we can apply in the human context when we come back with Dr. Will Winter in just a moment right here in London today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
I have a magazine called The Ecologist. It's an amazing magazine. There's a headline that says, "The greatest mistake of humans in the history of human beings, agriculture." And agriculture is the number one source of pollution on the planet.
Don't want to get off topic, but Dr. Will, I saw that quote and I thought, I just have to ask Dr. Will, agriculture, the biggest mistake in human history. You got 1 minute. Can you explain that?
Oh, boy, 1 minute. Where to start? Well, let's just say I'm working with a CAFO now for the first time in many years. A CAFO means confined animal feeding operation, where they have about 35,000 hogs in this operation. These farmers feel trapped. They're basically janitors. The pigs are owned by a mega corporation. The buildings are owned by a mega corporation. Even the feed is owned. And they go in there and clean manure every day, and they're barely making it. So they're bailing out of this situation. They're going back to organic. They're going back to non-GMO grain. And it's extremely painful for them and extremely difficult for them to bail out of this. So I really feel their pain, and I want to help. But you know what? There's so many people that live in the city that are actually better guardians of the planet than a lot of the people that live in the country. So just being in the country doesn't necessarily mean that you have the right to the noble task of raising food for others.
Okay, Dr. Wheel, so, I'm going to jump in and have Pam ask you the question because we only have about 3 or 4 minutes left, but she has a question.
Mm-hmm. On this show, we talk a lot about what humans should be eating in order so that they don't have to go to the doctor. What is it that pet owners should be feeding their pets so that they don't have to go to a veterinarian?
Okay, cat, dog, large, small, no matter how many animals you have, I encourage people not to use any dry food. Dry food is an abomination of nature. It's really a company that's job is to get rid of a waste product, market a waste product. They don't really care about your pet. Get the book, Herbal Guide to the Dog. It's available online by Juliet Levy. Amazing book, tells you how to make your own food. I don't believe in punishing big dogs because they're big. Many people say, well, I can't afford raw food. I have a big dog, or I have 5 dogs. It's like, you know what? Why didn't you get a chihuahua? If you can't afford to feed a big dog right, to me, I don't buy it. I think if whatever you have, you should feed it right. Make your own. Get raw food. Raw is amazing. Kind of like no excuse not to do that in my books. It's stunning. Juliet Levy says that 98% of all illness in pets can be prevented just with a good, clean, raw diet, and then she tells you how to do it. You can go online today and find a million websites about making raw food.
Now, Will, can you talk about the raw milk situation? I know we still have a lot of people here in Canada that are raw milk phobic. There's the upcoming raw milk symposium out in British Columbia this coming weekend. I'm not sure if you're going to be there, but can you just give us a summary of your views on raw milk? Farm fresh raw milk, of course.
Farm fresh raw milk should come from a natural farm. If you drank the raw milk that comes from a commercial factory farm, it will kill you. So there's food, there's milk that's made to be pasteurized, and that should be pasteurized. And then there's milk that's made to be drunk raw. And you want to follow the guidelines by Joe Robinson's wonderful website, eatwild.com, who helps you source raw foods and wholesome foods, eatwild.com. Dr. Joe Mercola has the largest website in the world for health. It's called Mercola, M-E-R-C-O-L-A.com. He helps you find wholesome raw milk. And then, of course, the Weston A. Price Foundation, and you can help people access that, tells you why you should do it and why you should support it. And I encourage every single raw milk drinker to become a member of the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
Doctor, I'm going to jump in. We have 1 minute left. Yeah. I wonder if you can summarize all of this, put it into a little box, and put a bow on it.
Boy, I'm good at talking for hours. I'm not very good at talking for 30 seconds. But I would say that every penny you spend for your pet or for yourself on good food will save you 10 times, 100 times as much in medical bills and health. That's the number one priority for your children, for your pets, for yourself, is to take care of your body. It's a holy temple. It's a place where you want to invest the most you can possibly invest, even if it means cutting back on your cell phone use or your cable TV or all the other things we take as luxuries. The best luxury of all is to feed yourself properly. That will keep your mind healthy and strong, your thoughts clear. You'll have energy to work and make even more money.
Okay, I have a really silly question. What's your middle name?
George.
Oh, I thought
maybe farmer.
I thought maybe it would start with W, and then your initials would be WWW, which would be totally cool initials to have
for the internet. Well, mine are even cooler. I'm named after my two grandpas. William means defender, and George means farmer. So I see myself as defender of the farmers.
Well, I hope one day that the University of Guelph, our local agricultural university, which is only about an hour and a half from London, I hope that one day that they invite you to come and speak on sustainable agriculture, because I know you've even spoke, I think, at Penn State University.
I've spoken at Guelph, and I helped start a chapter of their holistic vet students.
And Dr. Winter, the next time we have you on, we will focus on this question, because in one of your videos this morning I saw how many pounds of corn it takes to raise 1 pound of beef?
Correct.
What is the answer? I think it was...
The answer is cattle, goats, and sheep, no ruminant should ever get grain, ever. Not a bite. They're God's gift to the planet. They can save the world. We can feed the world. We can stop global starvation. We can actually sequester carbon back into the soil by using ruminant animals. And when you feed them corn, you basically created a pig, an inefficient pig.
Wow.
And these animals are designed to eat grass only. So when you go to the store, buy grass-fed beef, pastured pork, and outdoor chicken. So, you'll get the omega-3 fat, you'll get the conjugated linoleic acid, you'll heal your body, you'll heal the earth, you'll heal your brain. It's an amazing shift. And,
Doctor, we have to say goodbye. We thank you so much for
and
joining
Will's
us.
And Will's website, by the way, is willwinter.com. Willwinter.com. And this weekend, Andy, I'm speaking at the Total Health Show in Toronto at the Convention Center on Front Street. And next week, April 10th and April 17th, I've got my two-part digestion class. It's called The Gut-Brain Connection. So people can find out more information on my website, pamkaleen.com, and go to upcoming events.
And I like your advice. The best way to deal with all of these cancer and other issues is don't get sick and focus a lot of your attention and time and effort in staying healthy. 11 o'clock news coming up in just a moment. On the other side of the news, we're going to go back to our health crisis in London today by talking about, in the context of all of this, they're cutting nurses at London Health Sciences Center. Are you kidding me? We'll be back with that in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Attention.